This is the Pearson EdExcel International GCSE English as a Second Language Paper 2 Listening Test, June 2020. This test is in four parts, and you will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the end of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all four parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. Section A. In this section, you will hear five short extracts in which people are talking about sporting activities they take part in. Read the list of sporting activities below, then listen to the extracts. For each question, 1 to 5, identify which sporting activity, A to H, is being described by each speaker by marking a cross for the correct answer. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box, and then mark your new answer with a cross. Not all the sporting activities are described, and each may be used more than once. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions. Speaker 1.
It is one of the oldest sporting activities, practiced in the first Olympics thousands of years ago. The distances covered by this sport vary from a short sprint, which lasts for a few minutes, to a marathon, which is 42 kilometres in distance. It is a popular activity, as it does not require expensive equipment, and it is done mostly outside.
Speaker 2.
Now a popular, though expensive, winter sporting activity, this was once a simple way for people to move across deep snow. Nowadays, there are many cities that have specially built area with artificial slopes. However, if you want to practice on real snow, you will have to travel to countries where there is snow some part of the year.
Speaker 3.
Many will consider this a fun activity as it involves different types of movement, such as dancing and stretching to strong rhythmic music. It is designed to improve general fitness and muscle tone. It is usually done in a sports center with a specially trained instructor. You need to wear comfortable clothing and good indoor trainers.
Speaker 4. The sport was invented in Japan just over 100 years ago, and it belongs to the group of sports called martial arts. It is a competitive sport and involves two people who spar against each other, trying to get their opponent to the ground. The players wear coloured belts around their tunics, which show their level of expertise. Speaker 5.
Many people believe that this sporting activity started thousands of years ago. In modern times, it has played an important part in every single Olympic Games. It is a sport that requires a combination of grace, balance, and strength. There are many clubs specializing in this sporting activity, and children as young as 3 are encouraged to take part in it.
Now listen a second time and check your answers. Speaker 1.
It is one of the oldest sporting activities, practiced in the first Olympics thousands of years ago. The distances covered by this sport vary from a short sprint, which lasts for a few minutes, to a marathon, which is 42 kilometres in distance. It is a popular activity, as it does not require expensive equipment, and it is done mostly outside.
Speaker 2.
Now a popular, though expensive, winter sporting activity, this was once a simple way for people to move across deep snow. Nowadays, there are many cities that have specially built area with artificial slopes. However, if you want to practice on real snow, you will have to travel to countries where there is snow some part of the year.
Speaker 3.
Many will consider this a fun activity as it involves different types of movement, such as dancing and stretching to strong rhythmic music. It is designed to improve general fitness and muscle tone. It is usually done in a sports center with a specially trained instructor. You need to wear comfortable clothing and good indoor trainers.
Speaker 4. The sport was invented in Japan just over 100 years ago, and it belongs to the group of sports called martial arts. It is a competitive sport and involves two people who spar against each other, trying to get their opponent to the ground. The players wear coloured belts around their tunics, which show their level of expertise. Speaker 5.
Many people believe that this sporting activity started thousands of years ago. In modern times, it has played an important part in every single Olympic Games. It is a sport that requires a combination of grace, balance, and strength. There are many clubs specializing in this sporting activity, and children as young as 3 are encouraged to take part in it.
That's the end of Part 1, Section A. Now turn to Part 1, Section B. Section B. In this section, you will hear a short talk on the importance of children walking to school. For questions 6 to 10, listen and answer the questions below. Write no more than 3 words for each answer. 1 mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Being active is vital for children's physical and mental health, but making sure they get enough exercise isn't always easy. Unless they see a real purpose in it, many might be happier watching videos on a tablet or phone rather than running around outside. National Health Service guidelines recommend that children should be active for at least 60 minutes a day, linking this to better general health, stronger bones and teeth, and higher levels of self-esteem. That's why finding easy ways to fit more activity into their day can have real benefits. Recent research has shown that many parents want to encourage their children to walk to school more, instead of being driven or using public transport. Many feel this is an ideal way to get children to be fit as it builds in activity in a way that is easy to do. If parents want their children to be really active, then telling them that they've got to do vigorous exercise for an hour a day just won't work. However, if parents decide to change from being in a car and driving to walking with their children to school, then this can have quite an impact on daily energy expenditure, both for the children as well as the adults. Besides the physical advantages, there is plenty of research to show the positive effects that being active out in the fresh air can have on both mental health and learning. Being active outside is good for children's moods and makes them feel positive. That in turn helps with their concentration and focus. There are social benefits too. As children might be walking with their parents or friends, and that gives them time and a chance to talk about things they might not have time to talk about once they are at school, such as worries or concerns. So it's not just about physical health. Once you've convinced your children to walk to school instead of hopping into the car, it's important that the clothes, especially the shoes, are hard wearing, comfortable, and suitable for all weather conditions. Happy feet mean happy children.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Being active is vital for children's physical and mental health, but making sure they get enough exercise isn't always easy. Unless they see a real purpose in it, many might be happier watching videos on a tablet or phone rather than running around outside. National Health Service guidelines recommend that children should be active for at least 60 minutes a day, linking this to better general health, stronger bones and teeth, and higher levels of self-esteem. That's why finding easy ways to fit more activity into their day can have real benefits. Recent research has shown that many parents want to encourage their children to walk to school more, instead of being driven or using public transport. Many feel this is an ideal way to get children to be fit as it builds in activity in a way that is easy to do. If parents want their children to be really active, then telling them that they've got to do vigorous exercise for an hour a day just won't work. However, if parents decide to change from being in a car and driving to walking with their children to school, then this can have quite an impact on daily energy expenditure, both for the children as well as the adults. Besides the physical advantages, there is plenty of research to show the positive effects that being active out in the fresh air can have on both mental health and learning. Being active outside is good for children's moods and makes them feel positive. That in turn helps with their concentration and focus. There are social benefits too. As children might be walking with their parents or friends, and that gives them time and a chance to talk about things they might not have time to talk about once they are at school, such as worries or concerns. So it's not just about physical health. Once you've convinced your children to walk to school instead of hopping into the car, it's important that the clothes, especially the shoes, are hard wearing, comfortable, and suitable for all weather conditions. Happy feet mean happy children.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part two. In this part, you will hear an extract from a podcast on how to feel positive in the morning. For questions 11 to 18, listen and complete the sentences. Write no more than three words for each answer. Questions 19 and 20 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box, and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
As a lifestyle consultant, people often ask me how they can avoid feeling slow and negative in the mornings and kickstart this important time of day. If you find it hard to get out of bed each morning, and let's be honest, many of us do, hopefully these tips will leave you happier, calmer, and ready for a more productive day. Try to get a head start. Successful morning routines usually start the night before. The more organised and ready you are for the following day, the better your morning will be. Get into the habit of completing the simplest of tasks each night, such as tidying your room, laying out your clothes, or packing your bag. This will save precious minutes and your sanity in the morning. Try setting an evening alarm at a given time to remind you to start your evening routine. Once out of bed, try shaking off your sleepiness. Start your day by yawning and stretching to relieve tensions from the body. Then, try squeezing in some simple exercise, which will release endorphins, chemicals, which keep your mind and body happy. You don't need to embark on an hour-long cardio session. 5 minutes of star jumps or a brisk walk will have the same effect, clearing your mind and energizing your body. You can also start your day with conscious positive thinking, which is an excellent way to activate the body's inbuilt calming system. Focusing on the present can help when you know you have an anxious day ahead. Positive thoughts interrupt stressful ones and help you face the day more positively. Have you heard of grounding or earthing? In short, it means walking barefoot outside, preferably on grass. Some people think that it helps reduce stress and even boost energy levels. So, if you have 10 minutes in the morning, which you should have if you have got yourself ready the night before, get out of your slippers and step into the garden. A similar walk in the evening can also be beneficial, as it can promote better and sounder sleep. We all know that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So, try to fit a good bite to eat in your morning routine. Those who eat breakfasts are less likely to snack before lunch. Some studies have suggested that a good, balanced breakfast boosts memory and concentration. Nothing gets the body moving like music. So whether it's calming notes or an energizing beat, a morning playlist with favourite songs and music will set the tone for the day. On the other hand, you might be one of those people who switches on the news programme as soon as you wake up, or whilst you're getting your breakfast ready. Some psychologists suggest that this is not a good idea, and you might want to cut out this habit. News programmes can be stressful and can have a highly negative influence on your morning. For example, hearing that your favourite team has lost an important match will not put you in a positive frame of mind. Some people are naturally more motivated in the morning. Others are more active in the evening. However, our bodies are governed by light, and you can tweak your body clock with the help of light. As the mornings begin to get darker, you can invest in a natural light alarm clock, which can help to regulate your sleeping and waking patterns. The alarm mimics the natural colour and light of a real sunrise, with a gradually brightening light. This is a much gentler start to your day than the abrupt start with a traditional alarm clock. So, whichever idea you might consider, remember, it is important to include it in your routine so that it becomes second nature.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
As a lifestyle consultant, people often ask me how they can avoid feeling slow and negative in the mornings and kickstart this important time of day. If you find it hard to get out of bed each morning, and let's be honest, many of us do, hopefully these tips will leave you happier, calmer, and ready for a more productive day. Try to get a head start. Successful morning routines usually start the night before. The more organised and ready you are for the following day, the better your morning will be. Get into the habit of completing the simplest of tasks each night, such as tidying your room, laying out your clothes, or packing your bag. This will save precious minutes and your sanity in the morning. Try setting an evening alarm at a given time to remind you to start your evening routine. Once out of bed, try shaking off your sleepiness. Start your day by yawning and stretching to relieve tensions from the body. Then, try squeezing in some simple exercise, which will release endorphins, chemicals, which keep your mind and body happy. You don't need to embark on an hour-long cardio session. 5 minutes of star jumps or a brisk walk will have the same effect, clearing your mind and energising your body. You can also start your day with conscious positive thinking, which is an excellent way to activate the body's inbuilt calming system. Focusing on the present can help when you know you have an anxious day ahead. Positive thoughts interrupt stressful ones and help you face the day more positively. Have you heard of grounding or earthing? In short, it means walking barefoot outside, preferably on grass. Some people think that it helps reduce stress and even boost energy levels. So, if you have 10 minutes in the morning, which you should have if you have got yourself ready the night before, get out of your slippers and step into the garden. A similar walk in the evening can also be beneficial, as it can promote better and sounder sleep. We all know that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So, try to fit a good bite to eat in your morning routine. Those who eat breakfasts are less likely to snack before lunch. Some studies have suggested that a good, balanced breakfast boosts memory and concentration. Nothing gets the body moving like music. So whether it's calming notes or an energising beat, a morning playlist with favourite songs and music will set the tone for the day. On the other hand, you might be one of those people who switches on the news programme as soon as you wake up, or whilst you're getting your breakfast ready. Some psychologists suggest that this is not a good idea, and you might want to cut out this habit. News programmes can be stressful and can have a highly negative influence on your morning. For example, hearing that your favourite team has lost an important match will not put you in a positive frame of mind. Some people are naturally more motivated in the morning. Others are more active in the evening. However, our bodies are governed by light, and you can tweak your body clock with the help of light. As the mornings begin to get darker, you can invest in a natural light alarm clock, which can help to regulate your sleeping and waking patterns. The alarm mimics the natural colour and light of a real sunrise, with a gradually brightening light. This is a much gentler start to your day than the abrupt start with a traditional alarm clock. So, whichever idea you might consider, remember, it is important to include it in your routine so that it becomes second nature.
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part three. In this part, you will hear an interview with a man who designs spectacle frames. For questions 21 to 25, listen and answer the questions. You do not need to write in full sentences. Questions 26 to 30 must be answered with a cross in a box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then mark your new answer with a cross. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
How many of you wear glasses? Let's look at a typical scenario. You have just had your eyes tested and have been told by the optician that you will be needing new glasses. Fair enough. The optician then asks you to choose your frames. This is where the problems really start. In front of you are dozens of frames in different shapes and sizes. Which will you choose? Then, the problem of lenses. Do you choose plain, tinted, or photochromic ones, which might save you spending money on sunglasses? Decisions, decisions. One of the people you can blame for this state of affairs is Tom Davies, who designed spectacle frames. Tom, thank you for inviting me to your factory and for agreeing to talk on The Cut, our monthly radio magazine on design and technology.
Thank you. Welcome to my factory.
Tom, I see you are wearing a pair of bold black spectacles. Do you need prescription glasses, or is there more to this?
Well, when I first started working in eyewear design, I needed to test the product to see what the effect of my wearing glasses was. They quickly became part of my personal uniform. Today I'm wearing a black pair. Tomorrow I might wear gold-wired ones. I like the power wearing different glasses gives me over my image. The fact I have perfect vision is beside the point.
That's interesting. You started your eyewear business in London nearly 20 years ago. And since then, your designs have been worn by many famous stars and celebrities. Is it true your glasses have even been in show business, appearing on the screen?
Yes, they have. I designed the glasses in one of the most recent films for the character Clark Kent, who, as you know, is Superman's disguise. I had to create a persona who was quiet, and shy, and yet deep down there was something special about him. The type of glasses a person wears can tell a lot about them.
You obviously have a special clientele for whom you make glasses to order. How is that done?
Well, all those types of frames are made by hand. Each pair begins with a consultation with the customer about exactly what they would like to have. After that, a blueprint, or a plan, is designed to fit their exact measurements.
Am I right in thinking that the basic frame is cut by a machine? In the corner of the factory, you have a very strange-looking machine. Is that one of the frame cutters?
Oh no, this machine is now retired. When I started out, I didn't make handmade frames. This machine, and another one, which I've now dismantled, were ones which I had built myself. I didn't have the money to buy exactly the type of specialised machinery I wanted. They were great, as they helped me turn out 500,000 pairs of frames before I retired them. I've now invested in 2 high-tech machines which I use to make frames for the wider market.
So, does this old machine still work?
Oh yes, it still works, but the health and safety people won't let me plug it in.
Walking into your factory is like walking into a mass of colour. It's filled with sheets of acetate in many different colours, patterns and prints. What other materials do you use?
Well, here you can see the more special materials. Carbon fibre, which is a very strong but very light material. Sterling silver, gold, and, my favourite material, sheets of laminated buffalo horn. It is light yet tough, but so flexible it can be shaped and set by hand using hot oil.
Judging by the activity which is going on all around me, making a pair of spectacle frames is a very complex process. Am I right in thinking that? How long would it take you to make me a pair of frames?
A pair of specially ordered frames can take up to 22 hours to produce. It is a complex process that involves filing and polishing the edges until the frames are symmetrical. The frames are put through the bridge shaper and the hinges are then set. Finally, a craftsman guides a laser along the frame's arms to engrave the customer's name.
You appear to be a man in your element. It seems incredible that you could have ended up designing anything different from frames. You obviously love what you are doing.
Well, to be quite honest, I was not keen on going into this industry.
That's interesting. So how did you get involved?
After I graduated, I applied for every designer job that was going. And finally, I was offered one in Hong Kong. It turned out to be a new factory, looking for a designer of frames. When I was interviewed, I told them that I was not interested as I don't like glasses.
So what made you change your mind?
Well, the interviewer told me something which I now tell all my young designers. He said that eyewear is the most important area of design because it defines people. It's on their faces. It's the first thing you see when you meet them. Forget shoes, watches, clothes. This is the best area of design to be involved in. I took the job, and I'm still doing it.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
How many of you wear glasses? Let's look at a typical scenario. You have just had your eyes tested and have been told by the optician that you will be needing new glasses. Fair enough. The optician then asks you to choose your frames. This is where the problems really start. In front of you are dozens of frames, in different shapes and sizes. Which will you choose? Then, the problem of lenses. Do you choose plain, tinted, or photochromic ones, which might save you spending money on sunglasses? Decisions, decisions. One of the people you can blame for this state of affairs is Tom Davies, who designed spectacle frames. Tom, thank you for inviting me to your factory and for agreeing to talk on The Cut, our monthly radio magazine on design and technology.
Thank you. Welcome to my factory.
Tom, I see you are wearing a pair of bold black spectacles. Do you need prescription glasses, or is there more to this?
Well, when I first started working in eyewear design, I needed to test the product to see what the effect of my wearing glasses was. They quickly became part of my personal uniform. Today I'm wearing a black pair. Tomorrow I might wear gold wired ones. I like the power wearing different glasses gives me over my image. The fact I have perfect vision is beside the point.
That's interesting. You started your eyewear business in London nearly 20 years ago. And since then, your designs have been worn by many famous stars and celebrities. Is it true your glasses have even been in show business, appearing on the screen?
Yes, they have. I designed the glasses in one of the most recent films for the character Clark Kent, who, as you know, is Superman's disguise. I had to create a persona who was quiet and shy, and yet deep down there was something special about him. The type of glasses a person wears can tell a lot about them.
You obviously have a special clientele for whom you make glasses to order. How is that done?
Well, all those types of frames are made by hand. Each pair begins with a consultation with the customer about exactly what they would like to have. After that, a blueprint, or a plan, is designed to fit their exact measurements.
Am I right in thinking that the basic frame is cut by a machine? In the corner of the factory, you have a very strange-looking machine. Is that one of the frame cutters?
Oh, no. This machine is now retired. When I started out, I didn't make handmade frames. This machine, and another one, which I've now dismantled, were ones which I had built myself. I didn't have the money to buy exactly the type of specialised machinery I wanted. They were great, as they helped me turn out 500,000 pairs of frames before I retired them. I've now invested in 2 high-tech machines which are used to make frames for the wider market.
So, does this old machine still work?
Oh yes, it still works, but the health and safety people won't let me plug it in.
Walking into your factory is like walking into a mass of colour. It's filled with sheets of acetate in many different colours, patterns and prints. What other materials do you use?
Well, here you can see the more special materials. Carbon fibre, which is a very strong but very light material. Sterling silver, gold, and, my favourite material, sheets of laminated buffalo horn. It is light yet tough, but so flexible it can be shaped and set by hand using hot oil.
Judging by the activity which is going on all around me, making a pair of spectacle frames is a very complex process. Am I right in thinking that? How long would it take you to make me a pair of frames?
A pair of specially ordered frames can take up to 22 hours to produce. It is a complex process that involves filing and polishing the edges until the frames are symmetrical. The frames are put through the bridge shaper and the hinges are then set. Finally, a craftsman guides a laser along the frame's arms to engrave the customer's name.
You appear to be a man in your element. It seems incredible that you could have ended up designing anything different from frames. You obviously love what you are doing.
Well, to be quite honest, I was not keen on going into this industry.
That's interesting. So how did you get involved?
After I graduated, I applied for every designer job that was going. And finally, I was offered one in Hong Kong. It turned out to be a new factory, looking for a designer of frames. When I was interviewed, I told them that I was not interested as I don't like glasses.
So what made you change your mind?
Well, the interviewer told me something which I now tell all my young designers. He said that eyewear is the most important area of design because it defines people. It's on their faces. It's the first thing you see when you meet them. Forget shoes, watches, clothes. This is the best area of design to be involved in. I took the job and I'm still doing it.
That's the end of part three. Now turn to part four. Part four. In this part, you will hear an extract from a radio program about recycling car tyres. For questions 31 to 33 and 38 to 40, listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words for each answer. For questions 34 to 37, complete the table. Write no more than three words for each answer. One mark will be awarded for each correct answer. You have 2 minutes to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Welcome to our weekly consumer programme Homefront. Today we are talking to Fraser Evans, who runs what many of us might consider to be an unusual recycling plant. Fraser, over to you.
Thank you. As a nation, we are being constantly made aware of the problems of waste and the necessity of recycling plastics, fabrics and paper. Household appliances are particularly troublesome to dispose of. Another product which is causing worldwide problems with its disposal is car tyres. You may not have given it much thought, but tyres are an extremely important part of our everyday life. You depend on your vehicle's tyres to get you safely from one place to another, whether it's the early morning commute to the train station, quick dash to the supermarket or a school run. You would be forgiven for not giving a second thought to your old worn tyres when they're replaced by new ones that make your car safer to drive. However, have you ever stopped to consider what exactly does happen to those end-of-life tyres once they've left the rims of your car wheels and are set to one side by your local garage or tyre specialist? It is estimated that in Britain alone, about 500,000 tonnes of rubber tyres are discarded by consumers every year and enter our waste system. This poses an issue because tyres are considered among the most difficult items to recycle, given that they are made of a combination of steel, synthetic rubber and textile. Additionally, in Europe, it is illegal to deposit end-of-life tyres in landfill sites.
Are there any specific reasons for this?
Yes, tyres are extremely bulky, which caused problems in the past as they took up too much room in landfill sites. Secondly, the synthetic rubber, which is part of their composition, could take thousands of years to degrade. And thirdly, because of tyres' heavy metal content, toxins may leak into the ground, thus poisoning the environment. This means that all tyres must be either reused or recycled in some way.
So how are most tyres recycled?
In most cases, end-of-life tyres are granulated, ground down into relatively small particles, to ensure that the various materials within an individual tyre can be retrieved and sent to be recycled. It is probable that most tyres will have oil and other contaminants from road use, which must also be disposed of. Once the different materials have been separated into their three original components, they are then recycled. The steel is sent as scrap metal to steel mills. The fabric, which is synthetic, can be turned into nylon granules, which can then be used to make other products, such as clothing or footwear. We are left with the synthetic rubber, which is shredded into flakes known as rubber crumb.
What is rubber crumb used for?
Rubber crumb is very tough and can withstand a lot of wear and tear. That's why it is now being used on roads, especially on motorway surfaces. Trials have shown that the rubber content not only improves the grip of the car travelling on the road, but also helps to make the roads much quieter than traditional tarmac. Experts say that this is because the rubber helps to thicken the bitumen, the substance that is used to bind crushed stones together. The result is that the road surface traps and disperses the sound waves caused by the noise of the moving traffic. A quieter and smoother drive means that the driver is less likely to be involved in an accident.
Are there any other, perhaps less obvious but no less important, examples of how we can use recycled rubber?
Yes, you are right. This is just one of a number of eco-friendly uses for recycled rubber. Rubber crumb, for example, is used on sports surfaces in training centres, in children's playground areas, in schools and in parks. The relatively soft and slightly bouncy surface means that there are far fewer serious injuries when children fall. Modern playgrounds have become so much safer than the traditional concrete-covered ones. Athletes training for international competitions, such as the Olympics, and who need high-performance tracks, find the softer surface particularly beneficial because there is less stress and impact on their joints. Horse riding and training stables use the crumb as an all-weather surface, as water simply slips through the granules, leaving a safe and dry surface for riders to practice on. On a much smaller scale, gardeners have found that rubber crumb is an excellent form of mulch, a covering to protect their precious plants from excess heat or cold. It is free from any bacteria or viruses that traditional mulch may contain. There is the added bonus that, as crumb does not rot, it lets the plant's roots absorb moisture. The crumb can also be used around the house. Floor tiles and carpet underlay help to insulate the floors, making the home more energy efficient. Waste poses a threat to the environment and to human health if it is not managed properly. Conversely, you can see from some of the examples I have given, responsible waste management helps support and develop a sustainable economy. The recovery of used tyres is both an opportunity and a challenge, as they are a highly valuable resource for recycling.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Welcome to our weekly consumer programme, Homefront. Today we are talking to Fraser Evans, who runs what many of us might consider to be an unusual recycling plant. Fraser, over to you.
Thank you. As a nation, we are being constantly made aware of the problems of waste and the necessity of recycling plastics, fabrics, and paper. Household appliances are particularly troublesome to dispose of. Another product which is causing worldwide problems with its disposal is car tyres. You may not have given it much thought, but tyres are an extremely important part of our everyday life. You depend on your vehicle's tyres to get you safely from one place to another, whether it's the early morning commute to the train station, quick dash to the supermarket or a school run. You would be forgiven for not giving a second thought to your old worn tyres when they're replaced by new ones that make your car safer to drive. However, have you ever stopped to consider what exactly does happen to those end-of-life tyres once they've left the rims of your car wheels and are set to one side by your local garage or tyre specialist? It is estimated that in Britain alone, about 500,000 tonnes of rubber tyres are discarded by consumers every year and enter our waste system. This poses an issue because tyres are considered among the most difficult items to recycle, given that they are made of a combination of steel, synthetic rubber and textile. Additionally, in Europe, it is illegal to deposit end-of-life tyres in landfill sites.
Are there any specific reasons for this?
Yes, tyres are extremely bulky, which caused problems in the past as they took up too much room in landfill sites. Secondly, the synthetic rubber, which is part of their composition, could take thousands of years to degrade. And thirdly, because of tyres' heavy metal content, toxins may leak into the ground, thus poisoning the environment. This means that all tyres must be either reused or recycled in some way.
So how are most tyres recycled?
In most cases, end-of-life tyres are granulated, ground down into relatively small particles, to ensure that the various materials within an individual tyre can be retrieved and sent to be recycled. It is probable that most tyres will have oil and other contaminants from road use, which must also be disposed of. Once the different materials have been separated into their three original components, They are then recycled. The steel is sent as scrap metal to steel mills. The fabric, which is synthetic, can be turned into nylon granules, which can then be used to make other products, such as clothing or footwear. We are left with the synthetic rubber, which is shredded into flakes known as rubber crumb.
What is rubber crumb used for?
Rubber crumb is very tough and can withstand a lot of wear and tear. That's why it is now being used on roads, especially on motorway surfaces. Trials have shown that the rubber content not only improves the grip of the car travelling on the road, but also helps to make the roads much quieter than traditional tarmac. Experts say that this is because the rubber helps to thicken the bitumen, the substance that is used to bind crushed stones together. The result is that the road surface traps and disperses the sound waves caused by the noise of the moving traffic. A quieter and smoother drive means that the driver is less likely to be involved in an accident.
Are there any other, perhaps less obvious but no less important, examples of how we can use recycled rubber?
Yes, you are right. This is just one of a number of eco-friendly uses for recycled rubber. Rubber crumb, for example, is used on sports surfaces in training centres, in children's playground areas, in schools and in parks. The relatively soft and slightly bouncy surface means that there are far fewer serious injuries when children fall. Modern playgrounds have become so much safer than the traditional concrete-covered ones. Athletes training for international competitions, such as the Olympics, and who need high-performance tracks, find the softer surface particularly beneficial because there is less stress and impact on their joints. Horse riding and training stables use the crumb as an all-weather surface, as water simply slips through the granules, leaving a safe and dry surface for riders to practice on. On a much smaller scale, gardeners have found that rubber crumb is an excellent form of mulch, a covering to protect their precious plants from excess heat or cold. It is free from any bacteria or viruses that traditional mulch may contain. There is the added bonus that, as crumb does not rot, it lets the plant's roots absorb moisture. The crumb can also be used around the house. Floor tiles and carpet underlay help to insulate the floors, making the home more energy efficient. Waste poses a threat to the environment and to human health if it is not managed properly. Conversely, you can see from some of the examples I have given, responsible waste management helps support and develop a sustainable economy. The recovery of used tyres is both an opportunity and a challenge, as they are a highly valuable resource for recycling.
That is the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklet to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.